You know, it's not, just not young children and other adults that are disappearing. Scholars, intellects have vanished. About 35 of them so far. Physicists, mathematicians, economists. What's happening there? This is a weird story. We'll be back with David Politis as we talk about Missing 411. And again, don't forget to look at his trailer movie, Missing 411, the movie. And there's also a link to Kickstarter there to get this movie finished. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, David Politis with us as well. We're going to take your calls next hour with David. So those of you calling now, just hold back. We'll do it next hour. David, we're talking about the little case of Jared, who was out there, stumbled across a couple of fishermen. He was playing around with the water, and the fishermen didn't like that. What happened to him?
So search went on for weeks, and in the middle of the second week, his dad, Alan, got a call, and this person said he was from the inside of the sheriff's office, and he said, "You're not getting told the whole truth. They're withholding information from you, and I hope someday you'll learn the truth." And the guy hung up.
Wow.
Well, 4 years later, and about 700 feet above this trail, some people were hiking, and they found some clothing that they thought was Jared's. So they call search and rescue back in, and the sheriff's office goes in there, and they find a skull cap, and they find one tooth sitting on top of a log. And the clothing, his pants were inside out. The jacket he was wearing was laying on the ground, and he was wearing two shoes, and both those shoes were sitting on a boulder in the same vicinity. Now, George, what's interesting about this is that the shoes looked brand new.
4 years later.
Yeah, in four Colorado winters at about 9,500 feet, the vibrancy of the colors in the shoe were very high.
That makes no sense, David. None.
So they took the clothing and they sent it to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, and they didn't find one drop of blood on any of the clothing. And originally, the sheriff came out and gave a press release when they found the clothing and said, "Oh, he got attacked by a mountain lion and died." And the press threw it all over. And I've gotten a lot of heat from people who never read the book or the facts saying, "Why are you publicizing this? Because it was just a mountain lion killing." There's no way it was a mountain lion killing, because four experts that we have all looked at the evidence and said there's no way a mountain lion killed that boy. And Alan explained one of the key parts to this is that when Jared walked around, he never, ever tied his shoes. He didn't know how to, and he never wanted them tied. And if Jared was carried up the mountain and drug up that mountain, there's no way his shoes were going to make it up there. Now, myself and my son went up to that mountain, went to the point where he was found, and I can tell you it's about a 70-75% incline through some of the roughest, rugged, boulder-laden cliffs you can imagine. And to think that anything was able to drag Jared there, I don't believe it.
Jeez. Is it preposterous, David, to come up with a scenario that maybe these people are being beamed aboard like Travis Walton was in his case?
You know, I've had that told to me probably hundreds of times. And Travis and I are friends on Facebook, and I respect him a lot. And there's some of these scenarios that explanation would fit part of it. But then again, it doesn't fit all of it. And that is probably the perplexing part of these disappearances, is that it's hard to find one scenario that maybe fits all of it.
It's just, the more I talk with you about this, the more perplexed it gets, the more fascinating it becomes. When you were telling me yesterday of these missing intellectuals, physicists, mathematicians, what the heck is happening there?
And again, that's another one of those things where it doesn't hit, I'm a slow learner here maybe, but it doesn't hit me right away. I wrote a couple of books, and I started to see physicist missing. And then all of a sudden I said, you know what, I'm going to start looking to see if they include occupations or academics on these things. And in one of the first books I wrote, There were two men missing from Yosemite 3 months apart. And these really, really caught my attention. There was a young man named Orver von Loss, and he was a graduate student, University of California, Berkeley. And another man named Walter Gordon, graduate student, UC Berkeley. Both disappeared the same year, 3 months apart, in the same area, on the valley area of Yosemite. They were both walking in areas that would baffle you why or how they disappeared. Each said they were going for a short walk. Neither guy knew each other. They were in different majors. One was an economist and one was, I don't remember, but both were described by their friends inside of Cal as brilliant, absolutely phenomenally smart. Now, neither one of these were ever found. And I talk about these clustering effects of missing people, not just in geographical context, but also in time and space. And the weird part about von Loss and Gordon is that there wasn't a lot written about them in 1954. And I don't know if that was purposeful or not, but their families pushed so hard. They wrote to the president at the time, and they asked the president to send in special forces because they knew that their sons were taken. And they said, there's no way our sons would have walked away on their own. So we need help. And their request was denied. I made a request through the Eisenhower Library, and I actually got a letter that they wrote, and it's touching. They really wanted help, and they were ignored.
And nothing. Why? Why are they ignored? Why did they stymie giving information away? Even you have had a difficult time getting information from the federal parks, for example. How come?
Boy, George, you asked $1 million question. Why wouldn't they give this up?
You would think so.
Yeah, according to the law, they're supposed to. And there's cases I've asked about out of Yosemite under the Freedom of Information Act, and I've been told by the special agent in the Park Service that I will never get that case. And I asked them if it was a criminal case. They said no. They said it's just a missing person case. I said, has anybody touched the case in 12 years? No. Are there any suspects? No. I said, well, but I've gotten 30 other cases from other parks across the U.S. that are missing persons cases. Well, yeah, you might have gotten those, but you're never getting this. I said, well, what's the reason? Yep, no need to know. You're not getting it. That's their attitude sometimes.
Hmm.
Now, I should preface this by saying that the frontline park ranger that you meet in the park and that person wearing the Smokey the Bear hat, those are the salt of the earth kind of people.
Yeah, dedicated workers.
They are really, really dedicated. And we've met a lot of them, and they are all some of the best people we've ever met in our lives. And I would hold zero animosity towards them. And when you talk to them, they feel that, I can't say all of them, but the ones I've interviewed all have the same feeling about the administration. They're stymied in their efforts to find information sometimes. There's a couple of National Park Service rangers that have a website that they thought there was improprieties going on regarding their budget inside of a park. They filed the Freedom of Information Act against their own service to get budget information, and they were eventually eliminated from the Park Service because of their inquiry. This information with restrictions that are being placed by the Park Service are coming from people at the highest levels of the administration. These aren't rank-and-file people making bad decisions. These are the upper administration people saying, you're never going to get this. Namely, I wanted a list of missing people inside the National Park Service. They have a group, and I've been told there's 600 people approximately that are law enforcement officers within the Park Service. Now, that's a pretty large contingent of federally trained law enforcement personnel. They carry guns.
Sure is.
Some are special agent status that are detectives. You cannot convince me or any other journalist that this group of people is not going to track missing people in their system.
Knowing what you know now, David, would you freely go into a park?
You know, I get asked that question all the time, and I love the national parks. I go all the time. But there's a couple things I don't do anymore. I don't ever go alone. I don't ever go on a hike in a national park without a personal locator transponder I don't ever go without carrying my gun. And if I am going, I'm always going to let somebody know where I'm going and when I'm coming out. And if I don't, you come and get me.
Have there ever been reports of more than one person being taken at the same time?
Very rare, but there have been times. It almost seems as though the victims in these cases are people that are taken by opportunity. You know, first in line, not in sight, last in line, not in sight, alone, separated from others. A lot of times it's a hunter that gets separated from his hunting partners, and he'll say, I don't even know if they're on radio together. I don't know where I'm at, and I don't know if I'm going to find my way out tonight, so I'm just going to stay here, and then they never see him again. So it's almost like an opportunity issue. And when we talk about the intellects that have disappeared, it's always they're alone for some reason when they disappear.
Do you think that they're being stalked or tracked before they disappear?
You know, and we've had talks about this as a team, that it would almost appear that when the opportunity presented itself, even if it's just minutes, sometimes seconds, then the person is gone and they're not found. I think I'd be foolish to say that, to say no, that's not the case, because there are times where I do think that is the case.
Geographically, David, is there a specific area that gets more of these disappearing cases?
Well, let me talk about an area that doesn't get any disappearances, and that's right down north to south, right in the middle of the United States. And there's an online map, an older one, but you could look at it. Just go to Google Map, go to Google Missing 411 Map, and there's one that's online that'll show you. There's a more advanced one that has more disappearances, but still that middle section of the United States,
like the Midwest.
Yeah, exactly.
St. Louis
has almost nothing.
Why would that be?
You know, that's a good question. And another location that almost has nothing but is surrounded by clusters is Nevada. There's one or two inside of Nevada, but on the whole, when you look at the map, there's this dearth of nothing. Now, when I was a policeman, we would put up pin maps tracking serial robbers or serial rapists.
Right. You could look at the map and say, you could see a pattern.
Right. And one of the things they don't do is they never do something real close to home. They'll do it away from home. Usually the first time is closest to their house, but it's not very close. But then they'll spread out in a pattern, almost a circular pattern, from where they live to do their crime. And I've had other law enforcement guys say, Dave, it looks like the middle of Nevada is where these whatever's doing this is living, because obviously there's nothing there. And I mean, it's very strange, but all the way up the West Coast, there's an entire series of disappearances, and people have reminded me that it kind of follows a path of volcanic activity all the way up through British Columbia. And then coming down through Montana, Idaho, and the Rocky Mountains, going all the way down into southern Arizona, there's clusters. And then all along the Appalachian Trail on the East Coast, and then there's clusters that now completely surround the Great Lakes.
Eileen from Florida ironically wants to know if there are many disappearances there.
In Florida?
Yeah.
You know, when we originally started there, we had a stack of probably 200 disappearances, and it was one of the last states that we went through and vetted the missing people, and there aren't many. There's probably, I'm going to guess, in the whole state that fit our criteria, maybe 10 or 12. But they're few and far between. And again, one of the things that's predominant in these cases is relative location to water or mountains, namely completely surrounding the Great Lakes, all along the Appalachian Trail within hundreds of miles of the Atlantic Ocean, and then right on the Pacific Ocean.
We were talking yesterday, David, about the possibility of people disappearing in urban areas. And you're going to start looking into that.
Well, a long time ago, somebody said, you know, I know you're sticking to this profile, and that is important because we found something unique here. But think it would really show something. Now, one of the reasons that we've stayed in that rural area is that it's hard for people, once you understand the criteria, to say, oh, this is a human abduction, a human abducting a human. And when you go into that urban environment, it's very easy to say it's a human abducting a human. But if you stick to the profile points and you look at that urban environment, I think that there's a very good chance we're going to come across something here in the very near future that'll break it open. That's my gut telling me this, because I think it's bound to happen.
What are the possibilities that there's a sick organization out there that is doing this almost as if it's an initiation? Go ahead and get somebody. Possible?
Well, again, you have to remember that a lot of these people, small kids, have disappeared on rural trails in parks and forests. And I know for a fact that some of the best tracking bloodhounds and canines have brought into those areas, and they've utterly failed. And I don't, as somebody who's worked with dogs for almost my entire career, I know that those dogs live for that job. And for me to believe that time after time those dogs are failing, I don't believe it. And so I don't think that it's possible that a human could be taking somebody down a trail from the point they were last seen and the dogs wouldn't pick up on it. Or trackers, some of the best Indian trackers in the world have gone into these areas and have failed. And I know that if there had been somebody walking out, they would have tracked them.
David, I don't know where this is headed, but I'm sure glad that you're out there doing what you're doing. Do you continue to look at these cases? I mean, more and more keep happening, don't they?
Well, I mean, just in the last 3 months, there's probably been 10 at least that I've looked at hard, that I'm waiting on coroner's reports on a few of them to validate what happened, make sure it's just not a homicide. But I think that it's happening with more and more frequency. And in my last book, I laid out stats that showed in the last 3 years there's been an escalation in these type of disappearances.
We're with David Politis, his website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, talking about not only his books, Missing 411, but also the movie he is working on. When would you like to get the movie completed, if you had a wish?
Oh, I think that we're about a third, maybe a little more done, and we've got to get the money. We've got to get the pledges up to 100,000. We're at about 50 right now to finish. And if we could, I think we could do it by the end of the year, because I know the entire team is just sitting on the edge of their seat as I'm talking to you right now, saying, oh, I hope we can get this money. So if we can,
so
I know we're eager, and the guys have given sweat equity because they believe in this so much.
David, when we come back after this quick break, let's talk more about some of these missing cases. There was a case in Arizona on a camping trip. There was another case of a boy in Michigan, another sad case there. What about another case in Montana? They just don't stop. And, of course, we're going to take your phone calls with David Politis next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll talk more about these very strange cases of people disappearing. Welcome back to Coast, David Politis with us. David, this case of a hunter found in the mountains in Montana, 38-year-old man from Bozeman. What happened to him?
Well, there's the million-dollar question. Aaron Hedges, 38. He went missing elk hunting September 7th, 2014. And they searched for him long and hard, and he was one of those guys that got separated from his partners. And it was in an area of Park County, just kind of northeast of Bozeman. And they didn't find him. Well, 6 months later, they find his boots and some other items that it wasn't real clear. But they didn't find him. There was a massive search of the area. Then another 3 or 4 months later, they find his orange vest, his backpack, and some other items in another area. And anyone who has been hunting knows that you're not going to be taking your boots off, and you're not going to be removing your backpack, because it's kind of your lifeline to your food and your protection. So the whole thing is very strange, and I think it's concerning to the people there, because they found these strange items in areas that doesn't make any sense. But, you know, once you read these stories, you'll understand that this isn't uncommon. And I'm talking about in sometimes warm environments, you're going to find that people have completely stripped themselves of clothes. And it's an impossibility that it's in a hypothermia situation, because they haven't been out in the environment long enough to develop the hypothermia. And I get reminded of that a lot, except when you're talking about environments where it's warm, or the person couldn't have been gone long enough to develop the situation that is alleged.
So, David, what are the common denominators of these people who either are disappearing or they show up dead? But are there some similarities here that you can tie together?
More often than not, they're going to be missing clothing or their shoes or both. If they come back alive and they can speak, almost more times than not, they don't have a memory. And if they do have a memory, they tell strange stories. Sometimes they'll say that people have been following them in the woods. And I know that sounds weird, but that's what they'll say. And yeah, push them for a description, and they really can't give any. Sometimes if they're found deceased, they're found very close to a river, creek that's dry, and it would almost appear that it would be impossible for them to get from the location where they disappeared to the location where they were found. And they are found sometimes without shoes, without boots. Classic case, a physician named James McGrogan. He's from Indiana. He disappeared just outside of Vail, Colorado. He's with a group of friends, and they were backpacking up, and they were going to stay in an area high above Vail, and they had split skis with them and backpacks. Dr. McGrogan got ahead of the group. He disappeared. He was missing for almost two or three months. He's found 6 air miles east of where he was last seen, in an area that would have been essentially impossible to get to. He's found with his skis on his back, found in a dry creek bed, dead from a head wound. Apparently he fell, and he had a helmet on. But the strange thing that wasn't in any newspaper reports, wasn't in any police reports, it only appeared in the coroner's report, is that when they found him, he didn't have his boots on.
He didn't. What person in those weather conditions would take his boots off? Nobody would.
Well, in McGrogan's case, too, we interviewed the people at the sports shop where he rented everything. He had enough supplies that if he was lost, to put his tent up that was in his backpack and camp for 2 weeks and survive anything. He had an avalanche warning device. He had everything.
Does not make sense. So here's a question that I'm sure you have wrestled with. And I'm not going to get into exactly your speculation, because you're not going to speculate on what's happening to these people. But let me ask you to try to speculate on this. Why is it happening to these people? What is, whatever is happening to these people, what's the benefit? Serial killer, he's sick. That's what, you know, that's how he gets his pleasure. Killing people. What is somebody getting from this?
Well, if you go back to the intellect side of the fence where we talked about earlier, scholars and intellects have vanished. I put McGrogan in that highly, highly smart man, young man, ran marathons, brilliant emergency room physician. And there have been a series of physicians that have disappeared too that I've written about in the last book. And McGrogan didn't get in the last book because he was so current, but I'm telling you that he fits with that very, very smart person that wouldn't make those mistakes that he made. And I actually feel really, really bad for his family, because I don't think they're aware of anything we're talking about here, because it doesn't get mainstream coverage.
Hmm. But with these people, I mean, where's the benefit of murdering them, of taking something?
I wish I understood it all, George.
It's baffling.
It's discomforting.
It's scary when you think of the real possibilities of what could be happening here in our park systems and God knows where else. It's scary. Now, why the park system? Assuming it's just happening in the parks and it's not urban yet, and you haven't done the data study yet to find out. Why there? Because it's so secluded?
Well, I've been reminded of this hundreds of times in 6 years by people who have read the books, is that it's a controlled environment. I mean, the federal agencies control the investigations. They control the flow. If they don't want to give you something, there's no ramifications inside the Freedom of Information Act if they refuse you. You can appeal it, and I have many times. I always lose. So they don't want to give it to you. And they claim that they don't have the data. Even if we don't believe it, what can we do?
Do you think some of the people in the park systems know what's happening? And they're just afraid to say it.
So the higher ups, the top level administrators are not idiots. I mean, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but you can read the data that I've laid out in four books and you can see that there is something highly, highly unusual and coincidental in case after case, 1,600 of them, that all seem to follow the same patterns. And people on a big trail disappear and they're never found. That, to me, seems impossible.
What about this case of this Arizona woman?
So this is the title of it was Las Cruces Woman Abducted on Arizona Camping Trip. Again, if you look at all of the cases I have, that word abduction and kidnapping will come up when they come up with nothing at the scene.
Exactly.
And there's no shoes, there's no sweaters, there's no backpack. They eventually have to say they were kidnapped or they were abducted because there's nothing else left. Now, this woman falls into this category that I've been talking to you about, extreme disability, partially blind, suffers from short-term memory loss. They were 4 miles southeast of the Chiricahua National Monument. I know I probably destroyed that name. But why that's important to me is, first of all, there's a cluster of missing people in this area. And it's that monument is the only National Park Service location in the U.S. that I can figure out where an on-duty National Park Service ranger disappeared and was never found. His name was Paul Fugate. And now this woman disappears 4 miles from there. She was with her mom. Mom was going to use the restroom. She said she was just going to walk back to her car. It's in a pretty big camp area, a lot of people around. Nobody hears anything. Nobody sees anything. Canines can't track anything. They don't find her shoes. Again, this happened June 19th of this year in a place called Rustler Park. This woman just vanished.
Huh. David, what was that case we were talking about yesterday where a little boy disappeared, but somebody spotted some kind of object on the back of a creature going up a mountain? Do you remember that one?
No, I don't.
They were looking for the little boy. They couldn't find him. He was in the mountain, and there was an eyewitness who didn't tell anybody.
Oh, that was the Dennis Martin incident in Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
Okay, go ahead.
June of 69, Dennis was 6 years old. He's with his dad, his grandpa, his brother, and they were in an area called Spence Field. They hiked into it for Father's Day weekend. They were in this field playing, and a family walks up to the Martins, and this is all a series of coincidences, and I'm telling you, it's strange. So the Martin family's there playing around. Another family walks up and says, "Hey, can our boys play together?" Mr. Martin says, "Sure." And they introduce themselves. "Oh, my name's so-and-so Martin." Mr. Martin looks at him and goes, "Our last name is Martin." Now, from this point on, I've been reminded many times that, well, maybe the abduction scenario was for one of their family members, not Dennis. Now, Dennis had a slight learning disability. He was 6 years old. They're playing hide-and-seek. Dennis goes and hides behind a tree. Mr. Martin was a super smart guy. He was an architect. He watched his son walk behind the tree. He told me he never took his eyes off the tree. When everybody said 30, 40 seconds later, okay, everybody come out, Dennis never came out. Mr. Martin got up out of his chair, walked right over to the tree. His son was gone. Right adjacent to that tree, within feet, was the Appalachian Trail. He told me he took off on a dead run down the trail for 2 miles. He came back, found nothing, told his dad, go back and go down the hill and get Rangers. His dad took off. Within hours after Dennis disappeared, it started to rain, and it rained solidly for 7 days. I forget how much the guesstimate was, like 6 to 8 inches, an enormous amount. Jeez. Now, as this is going on, immediately as it's happening, there's a family 2 miles away, downhill in the valley, that are asking a ranger where they can go to see a bear. Rangers sent them up this area called Rowan's Creek. Now, this family's last name is Key, K-E-Y, the Key family. Another coincidence, because this is the key to the whole case in my mind. The Key family walks up this valley. They slowly get separated from each other, and a father and two sons are far up the valley looking up a hill, and a 12-year-old boy tells his dad, hey, look, there's a bear up there running around. His dad says, no, son, that's not a bear. That looks like a man, but they're hiding behind trees. And just before they make the observation, they hear the loudest, sickening scream they described that they'd ever heard. So they see this thing running behind trees. Now, they don't know a boy disappeared. They don't know anything's happened. They come back. They eventually go home. And next day in the front page of the Knoxville Times is a story about Dennis Martin and that he disappeared, and he disappeared up on Spence Field. Well, Mr. Key says, I don't know if it's related, but I should call. So they were told that an FBI agent was monitoring the cases at the park. So they call the FBI, and they volunteer to go down and show the agent where this happened. They get a call back, and the agent and an officer from the Park Service says, no, don't come to the park. We'll come to you. Doesn't make any sense, because if I'm the investigator, I want to know where you were at exactly and what you saw. So the Key family never goes to the park. The Martin family had an agreement with the Park Service that anything of any evidentiary value, Mr. Martin would be told. He never left the park for 6 weeks. Now, weeks later, Mr. Martin gets told about this from a newspaper reporter. Mr. Martin goes livid, but the Park Service tells him, don't worry about it because the timeline doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible for your son to get from point to point in that region. Dwight McCarter is the head tracker for the Park Service at the time, and we went out and interviewed him. And McCarter told us that he knew when he heard that was a lie. And he took Mr. Martin by the hand and said, hey, let's go right now. We're going to walk this and see if we can do it. And they did it in the time frame that it was alleged. And they went to that exact location. Mr. Martin was even more upset at this point. Now, who told everyone that this was impossible was the FBI agent. Now, George, I got a file that's 3 inches thick on this case from the Park Service. Nowhere in any of the documents does it talk about the Key family, their observations, what they saw, nothing, nowhere. Now, how I found out about it was that the Knoxville Times wrote a series of articles, and they wrote about this. But they left a few key things out. Now, I went and I spoke with Mr. Martin, and he has never moved from the location where he lived when Dennis disappeared. And myself and another researcher went up, knocked on the front door. He came to the front door. I explained who I was, and I said, Mr. Martin, I doubt there's anybody in the world that knows more about this case than you and me. I just want to ask you a few quick questions. And he says, Dave, I spent my whole life trying to put this behind me, and I promised my wife I wouldn't talk to anybody. And at the time, I came from California. He said, I traveled all the way from California just to talk to you. Just give me 15 minutes. And he said, sure. And he stepped out onto the front porch. George, I've talked to a lot of victims and a victim's parents
You've
in my life.
You've seen it all. You've seen it.
That one conversation changed me because I was shook. We both had tears in our eyes when we left because this man was totally lied to consistently by everybody in the investigation. I started to talk to him and I asked him a series of questions, you know, explain to me what happened when Dennis disappeared. He did. I asked him about the key family observation and he said, well, Dave, you do know a lot about this, huh? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, do you know something about that observation that wasn't in the paper and wasn't in any reports, but they saw something that wasn't included? Do you know what that was? I said, no. He said, well, they saw something that looked to be Harry running around on the side of that hill. And something was on that thing's shoulder at the time.
Jeez.
I said, so you mean you're implying it was carrying something? He said, yeah. He said, the Key family told us that and told the investigators and told the reporter, but nobody would put that in the newspaper. Nobody would put it in a report. I said, is there something else I don't know that happened that nobody else knows about? He says, yeah. He says, you know, apparently you wrote about all the stories of the disappearances in this area over the previous 30 years. I said, yeah, I have. And he says, you know, it's the same FBI agent each time. I said, yeah, I've named him in every report. He says, do you know what happened to that agent? I said, I have no idea. We've tried looking for him. He goes, he committed suicide.
My God.
I went back to McCarter.
He knew something.
Well, I went back to McCarter, the tracker. I told him everything Mr. Martin told me. I said, is that true? McCarter said, it's all true. I said, then what did they see on the mountain? And McCarter told me that there's a series of quote-unquote wild men, people like you and me that live off the grid, that have furs on their shoulders, and that live up there.
Bigfoot?
He says wild men. And his quote was people like you and me that just live off the grid.
Huh.
And he said, he goes, it's my opinion that Dennis was abducted. And I said, then why weren't they able to find him or track him? He says, well, that's a good question. And I said, well, there was even a Green Beret regiment that was brought in and searched alone. They wouldn't talk to anybody. They searched without search and rescue personnel and without Park Service assistance, and they had their own communication system. I said, even they couldn't find this thing. He says, yeah, you're right.
David, stick with us. Coming back, we'll talk a little bit more about these incredibly missing cases, missing 411, and we'll take phone calls next.